We see that Elijah had withdrawn into the little town of Gilgal, which is not very far from Jericho. What we need to understand here, and then we can be a bit eschatological if you like, the horses of fire and the flaming chariots stand by, prepared behind the clouds for the time of Elijah's departure. But before the departure, Elijah goes from Gilgal to Bethel to bid a last farewell to his friends. And it's at this point that we see Elisha insisting on going with Elijah. And a number of times Elijah makes the statement to Elijah, "I will not leave thee." Can you think of somebody else making that sort of statement? Peter, yeah. That's right, Ruth, with Naomi. "I will not leave thee. Your God shall be my God." And, of course, Peter. Even though this request was made, Elijah wanted to be alone. Why do you think he wanted to be alone? Well, the obvious is before us, because in a few days he was going to be passing through the heavens into the presence of the Lord, where he would see all his ancient fathers of the faith. He would see Abel and Enoch and Moses. They'd all be there, wouldn't they? Well, no wonder he wanted to be alone, because he was contemplating the glory of it all. But three times did Elijah ask Elisha to leave him. Once at Gilgal, then at Bethel, and then at Jericho. But three times Elisha replies, "As the Lord liveth, and as thy soul liveth, I will not leave thee." Well, "as the Lord liveth" is all right. "As thy soul liveth." What do you think of that? Well, what do you think is in the mind of Elisha? Elisha knows the Lord liveth. Here's divine guidance given to Elisha, isn't there? That Elijah is going to live on and on and on. "As thy soul liveth, I will not leave thee." Elijah was always going to be around, wasn't he? Elijah was around in the minds of the people in the days of John the Baptist, in the days of our Lord Jesus. He was around in the days of the Mount Transfiguration experience. But just let's think of it for a moment. "As the Lord liveth, as thy soul liveth." Two very profound statements, aren't they? Well, can't the born-again Christian say that? Yeah, should be able to. "As the Lord liveth, and as thy soul liveth," because we will live on and on in eternity. Well, now let's see what we see in Elijah now. We see Elijah and Elisha at Bethel, where the sons of the prophet went out to meet them. Now, in the language of our day, these young men were candidates for the ministry. You see, the Bible mentions four of these interesting seminaries, two in the time of Samuel. One was at Kirjath-Jearim, where the Ark of the Covenant was kept at that time. 1 Samuel 10, verses 5 and 10. And you'll see them there. They're coming with some musical instruments in verse 5. And then you see them down over here in verse 10. "A company of prophets met him, and the Spirit of God came upon him, and he prophesied among them." Do you see the school of prophets there, the seminary? Another one is at Ramah, where Samuel is expressly mentioned as appointed over them. 1 Samuel 19, go across to 1 Samuel 19 now, and verses 18 to 24. David fled, of course, and escaped, and came to Samuel to Ramah, and told him all that Saul had done to him, and Samuel went and dwelt in Naoth. And it was told Saul, saying, "Behold, David is at Naoth in Ramah." And Saul sent messengers to take David, and when they saw the company of prophets prophesying, and Samuel standing as appointed over them, the Spirit of God was upon the messengers of Saul, and they also prophesied. And when it was told Saul, he sent other messengers, and they prophesied likewise. And Saul sent messengers again the third time, and they prophesied also. Then went he also to Ramah, and came to a great well, that is, at Sekuah, and asked, and said, "Where are Samuel and David?" And one said, "Behold, they be at Naoth in Ramah." And he went thither to Naoth in Ramah, and the Spirit of God was upon him also. And he went on and prophesied until he came to Naoth in Ramah. And he stripped off his clothes also and prophesied before Samuel in like manner, and lay down naked all that day and all that night. Wherefore they say, "Is Saul among the prophets?" Well, it's all very interesting reading, isn't it? We won't be able to go into the depth of it and exegete it. We'd be here all night if we did. Now, there's two more seminaries, and they were in the time of Elijah and Elisha. One was at Jericho and one was at Bethel. Now, there were young men in these places, in the seminaries or the colleges, And they not only went to college, but they had to have a job for a living as well as they studied for the ministry. Now, this is revealed in 2 Kings chapter 6 and verse 4. I'm just going to get it all out in the open for you tonight, and then we're going to discuss it. They went out, and when they came to Jordan, they cut down the wood, and they got tools in their hands, and they're engaged in constructing their wooden dwellings. Now, amongst the sons of the prophet, we see the presentation of prophecy and sacred song, and that we saw from chapter 10 of 1 Samuel and chapter 19. But we need to remember that there were exceptions to the rule. Now, this is one of the great lessons I've learnt, is that the Lord has laid down certain basic rules, but every now and again, there's an exception to the rule. It's like the thief on the cross who comes to the Lord in the 11th hour. There were seminaries for the schools of the prophets, but there were exceptions. Amos is an exception. In Amos 7:14, the prophet says, "I was no prophet, neither was I a prophet's son, but I was a herdsman and gathered of sycamore fruit, and the Lord took me as I followed the flock and said to me, 'Go prophesy unto my people Israel.'" When I was in college and I studied the book of Amos, I was greatly moved by the content of the book of Amos. But I was also very moved about the historical timing of Israel. It seemed to me that God does the unusual when the church goes to sleep. If you read a little church history, you will read back into times like Charles Haddon Spurgeon's ministry. Virtually the church in England had gone to sleep. And God took a man like Charles Haddon Spurgeon, who had never ever gone near a seminary, and raised him up for ministry. God raised Moody up in a time when the church was legalistic but dead. It thrills my heart to read of Moody's ministry, as Moody ministered in England and Edinburgh and throughout America. And, you know, when he went into Scotland, and some of those dear people in Scotland, lovely church-going people, but dead spiritually, and God used Moody. Now, there are exceptions, because it also proves the sovereignty of God, that God can take any one of us at any given point in time and use us in a most phenomenal way for his glory. God puts his hand on you, you've got to be willing. If you try to run away from God, he'll catch you. Now, I've never told you. I got spoken to on a Saturday night in 1961. It was at the church grounds, and they'd had a barbecue, and they decided not to come into the church building. They decided to have the meeting out in the open air. My wife and my children and myself went to that meeting. My wife and children went and sat on the chairs, and I stood back in the shadows. But I can always remember that night, the Lord spoke very clearly to my heart. And I said, "Well, what can I offer you?" And I thought, nothing. But you know, I was so spoken to, it wasn't what I could offer God, but what God could offer me. And I was broken. And that was a bit hilarious, because I told Beryl that night about it. And she said, "Well, you better tell the pastor." And I told the pastor, and he was very gracious about it. You see, at that time I was illiterate, had this bad speech impediment. He told a few people in the church to pray about it, and they had difficulty even in praying about it. You know, I didn't look ministerial material. At that particular time, I had learnt to pray a little bit, and I was going to an early morning prayer meeting twice a week before I went to work with three or four others. And in that group was a young woman called Bright Eyes, I called her, had fascinating eyes. She was engaged to be married to a missionary, and he was on the mission field. And she had to make up her mind whether she'd go ahead and marry him and go to the mission field. And I can remember the hassle she had. She said, "I am not going to be a missionary's wife. He will come home and get another job, and we will get married, and we will settle down." We were praying, and I kept saying, "Well, Lord, I can't offer you anything. I don't have any education. I don't have anything." Well, a few months later, Dr. E.H. Watson was alive then, and he had a crusade. And like everybody else, I was involved in running around getting everybody else to that crusade. And on the Sunday morning, I said to Beryl, "You saved me a seat," because the church was packed. And I said, "When I get back," I said, "I'll come in and sit alongside of you." Now, Dr. E.H. Watson was on the board of the association with me for many, many years. But I can still remember, I can still hear his voice and still see that man. Came to the invitation, and he leaned across the pulpit, and he just said something like this. He said, "Are you willing to go?" And then he paused, and then he thought again, and he said, "Are you willing to go?" He said, "Are you willing to go, whatever the cost?" Well, the Lord broke me right there and there in the church. I sobbed my heart out. Bright Eyes was on the other side of the congregation. She was sobbing her heart out. I went into the ministry, and she went to the mission field. I mean, I had a beautiful home. I mean, I had a good job. Right, I had a good job. Who wants to go to the mission field? But that's where she went, and that's where I went. And so God can get hold of the ordinary person and take them and use them. Now, it must have been very gratifying to Elijah to have these sons of the prophet come out to meet him and to hear from their voices, like you hear from students in college, all the excitement of being in college training for the ministry. There's a mixture of divine truth mixed in with excitement. And you know why I think it was thrilling to him? Because he realized that at that point in history, the people of that day were still in the midst of the satanic teaching of Ahab and Jezebel. So his heart is warmed as he realizes that Yahweh is training and preparing men for the ministry. And what a thrill that must have been for Elijah as he prepares to go home to the Lord, to know that Yahweh has many, many prophets in the making and the kingdom of God will be made known. So Elijah now leaves the seminaries and he travels to the banks of the River Jordan. We must not forget the 50 young prophets who followed him. You read on in chapter 2, they make their way now and they go down towards the Jordan. And the 50 young sons of the prophet went also, and they stood afar, verse 7, and here's this magnificent mantle that Elijah still got. He hasn't given it to Elisha yet. Those 50 men must have been absolutely moved as they watched Elijah that day, as he's about to leave them, because when he arrives at the brink of the Jordan, he does not doubt how he's going to pass over the river, because he hadn't forgotten that with one stroke of his rod, Moses parted the water. Now we see another miracle. Isn't this wonderful how God leaves confirmation in the mind of people? I never cease to be amazed that when I open my Bible and I constantly study and I meditate and I research the scriptures, is that time and time I see looming out at me confirmation from God. He's confirming everything he's doing all the time, isn't he? You see the very evidence of it. So here, these young prophets, thrilled, excited, they follow the grand master, and Elijah is perhaps the greatest prophet, except the Lord, of course. And they follow him, and they stand afar, and they watch him as he's about to cross the River Jordan. And I suppose some of those young prophets, like some theological students, were debating whether he'd swim across or whether he'd hire a boat and row across. But just to prove to those young prophets, Yahweh now takes the mantle that's in Elijah's hands and performs a miracle. What a great thrill that must have been for those young prophets. It would have left an impression on them. So the water is divided, and Elijah passes over the Jordan with Elisha. What about Elisha? Don't you think his faith would have also been strengthened as he saw the miracle? Because he was about to get this mantle. Now, we come to some beautiful words in 2 Kings, verses 9 and 10. Have a look at these words. Aren't they beautiful? And it came to pass, when they were gone over, that Elijah said to Elisha, ask what I shall do for thee before I be taken away from thee. Oh, I tell you, if you were Elisha, you'd be longing to ask Elijah, wouldn't you? But no, it's Elijah. To which Elisha replies, let a double portion of thy spirit be upon me. Well, what's the reminder that we get in the New Testament? It's our Lord's words to his disciples. Verily, verily, I say unto you, whatsoever ye shall ask the Father in my name, he will give it you. Hitherto have ye asked nothing in my name. They hadn't asked up to this point. And he says, ask, and you shall receive, that your joy may be full. Now, when we look at the bold invitation to Elisha to ask what he would from the departing prophet, indicates the spiritual condition of Elisha. Isn't that great? Elisha was now spiritually equipped to carry on. You don't throw the mantle to an unspiritual person. Or to use a good New Testament phrase, you don't cast pearl before swine. But what a great moment. Here is Elisha to carry on the ministry, but he's spiritually prepared, showing you that God makes no mistakes. What we need to understand, what is transpiring here, is spiritual and not the fulfilling of the law. Elisha asking for a double portion was not referring to the birthright of the firstborn who inherited twice as much as his brothers and sisters. The law laid down, well, it goes back to Abraham. Remember Abraham with Isaac, and then he remarried, and Keturah had six sons. And when it came to divide up Abraham's inheritance, the one who was the rightful heir was Isaac. Now, this was the law. A lot of people may have misunderstood what was really transpiring at this moment. So Yahweh makes it clear in the mind of Elisha, as indeed it was to be clear in the mind of every prophet afterwards, that this was spiritual and it was not of the law. Now to Elisha's request, Elijah answered, "Thou hast asked a hard thing. Nevertheless," now here's the conditions, "nevertheless, if thou see me when I am taken from thee, it shall be so unto thee, but if not, it shall not be so." See, it was conditional, wasn't it? Now let's look for a moment at the condition which Elijah, by divine inspiration, makes the request. "If thou seest me when I'm taken from thee, it shall be so unto thee, but if not, it shall not be so." It's both spiritual and physical, because he did see spiritually and he did see physically. But the emphasis is more on the spiritual. Elijah is saying to Elisha, "Do not expect the gift from me, but from him who takes me away." In other words, Elijah is saying to Elisha, "Elisha, I don't have the right to give you the double portion. Only the Lord has the right to give you the double portion." Let's go back to the word, and then let's have some discussion. Verse 11, "And it came to pass, as they still went on and talked, that behold, there appeared a chariot of fire, and the horses of fire, and parted them both asunder, and Elijah went up by a whirlwind into heaven. And Elisha saw it, and he cried, 'My father, my father, the chariot of Israel, and the horsemen thereof.' And he saw him no more. And he took hold of his own clothes, and he rent them in pieces." Tell me what you think of verse 12. "Abba, Father, my Father, the sovereignty of God." Yeah, don't worry about the small f. "My Father." "And he took up the mantle that fell, and he went back, and he stood by the bank of the river Jordan." And what does he do? He took the mantle, and he smote the waters, and he walked back across the other side. So the prophets, the sons of the prophets, saw a double miracle that day, didn't they? They saw the waters parted as they went over, and then as Elisha came back, they saw the confirmation of God upon Elisha. And you know, there's a great spiritual lesson there for all of us. We need to constantly see the confirmation of the Lord upon people's ministry, don't we? And our own service and ministry for the Lord.